What if we could live more in harmony with our animal friends and the whole of nature simply by stopping and listening more? Chats with Animal Professionals and Interspecies Communicators aims to bring animals and the world of nature front and center. We'll be chatting with professionals working in the animal industry and intuitive interspecies communicators about their work in the field. I'm your host, Tracy Pierce. I'm a professional animal communicator and lifelong animal lover and spiritual explorer. I've worked with animals professionally since 2002, and I've been studying animal communication and the human-animal connection since 2014. Chats with Animal Professionals and Interspecies Communicators is for animal lovers, nature lovers, intuitives, spiritual seekers, and those interested in interspecies communication. Our aim is to bring awareness to these professions and to expose the new and old science behind some of these seemingly out-of-the-world careers. We hope to educate and tickle your mind about what is possible by discussing this work and ways we can work with our animal friends, nature friends, and the planet as a whole, instead of them always being a secondary consideration. Join us now as we explore today's topic. Hello and welcome to this episode of Chats with Animal Professionals and Interspecies Communicators. Our guest today is Kathy Chouinard, and our topic is reflecting on the 2023 International Multispecies Research Symposium. At Eternal Heart Connections, Kathy helps pet lovers understand their animal, discover the soul lessons the animal is teaching them, and find comfort during their pet's end of life. She's a soul level animal communicator, an energy practitioner for animals and humans, and trained as a companion animal end of life doula. Kathy is excited about the future of intuitive interspecies communication research, the animal communication profession, and the possibility of new opportunities to partner with and advocate for animals. As a member of the Animal Communication Collective, Kathy participates in fundraising events for animal welfare organizations. One day she hopes intuitive skills are universally taught and communication with living and departed animals is seen as a natural part of life. Kathy, welcome to the show today.
Hi, Tracy. So happy to be here today. Thanks for inviting me.
Yeah, I'm excited about our conversation here today. And I wonder, to kick things off, could you tell our listeners a bit about you and how you came to do this work that you're doing?
Okay, sure. 3 years ago, I had no idea I would be doing this or sitting here with you. I was working as a research dietitian. I provided or developed controlled feeding studies for clinical studies with humans, where we would develop diets that we would feed to people. And then I also would be looking at what food people were eating at home and looking at the nutrient composition. And that was pretty much my whole life. I loved research and helping investigators answer questions that were on their heart. Unfortunately, though, in 2020, in February, March, just before the COVID shutdown, one of my two 18-year-old cats, Miko, was diagnosed with heart failure and given just a few months to live. And at that time, I was going through all those things that people do when they have a beloved animal that has received a terminal diagnosis. And I was sharing with a friend, it's like, I wish I knew what he wanted. I don't know. What does he need? Is he in pain? Yeah, all those things that run through your mind. And she said, well, why don't you talk to an animal communicator? And I said, what? Why have I never heard of this? I felt like I was pretty much connected to the metaphysical shops and attended all the classes and knew the practitioners that were locally and taken lots of classes for different things. But I never heard of that. Animal Reiki, yes. Animal communication, no. And she said, well, I know an animal communicator who used to live in Iowa City. Let me give you her contact information. And so that was you, Tracy, as you know. And I reached out to you and had my first animal communication session with you, which just blew my mind. It was a total paradigm shift for me. I knew, I had a sense and intuition, I guess, that my animals were communicating with me. And I was picking up maybe some of the things, but until you articulated what was going on with them, and it was like it opened a whole new world for me. It's kind of hard to put into words the profound and energetic, I would say, shift that happened through that first conversation. And I knew that I needed to learn more and wanted to learn more. And I had subsequent conversations with you when my other 18-year-old cat, a few months later, was also diagnosed with a terminal condition. And it was so incredibly comforting for me to be able to know that I was able to communicate with my animals, have at this point, having you be able to be that translator for me, and to have that connection to help guide me and in terms of how I was interacting with my pets. And then the other thing that was really important during this time was, well, actually there were probably a couple of things that were important. One was I was so grateful that even though it was in the beginning of the COVID shutdown, we were wearing masks, we were like washing groceries because we didn't know anything that was going on. I had wanted to have someone come for euthanasia in the home. I didn't want to have to go to the vet's office. And so I was so grateful that there was a local vet who was willing to do that during the early stages of COVID when none of us knew what was happening. And so that was just incredibly meaningful to be able to have that in the comfort of my home, in comfortable surroundings, for the animal as well as for me. And so that was just incredibly important. And so the other thing related to this was I was so incredibly fortunate. I had planned to have Miko cremated, and I had reached out to the local crematorium for animals, and I wanted to be the one to bring Miko in and do a witness cremation so that I could be there from the time that I brought him in and be able to bring things in that I wanted him cremated with and to have to be there when they were taking paw prints and preparing him until the point where the person who was there put him in the retort. And so I was so incredibly grateful that one of your previous guests on your show, Dawn Freire, was there to be there that day. She was so incredibly comforting and just had this wonderful heart. And we had this, I would say, a holy time where she blessed him, and I was able to lay Miko out with the items that I had brought, and then to be able to wrap him in a shroud. And she got flowers from the outside and placed on top. And it was just, and I was able to say a few words that she videoed. So I had my own little memorial service there in the midst of COVID with us wearing masks and everything. And so it was just so incredibly meaningful to me. And so all this, a very long way to go about saying that these experiences were so profound for me that I felt like I wanted to be able to offer that in some small way to other folks who are going through those similar circumstances. So I got some training in animal communication and was certified, and I completed a companion animal end of life doula course for animals, and also took some classes for Reiki and other energy therapies for animals and humans, because that was also another important part in terms of the whole end of life for my animals, so to support me and to support them.
Yeah, thanks for sharing that story, Kathy. I can really relate to what you're saying, where like for me too, it was having connection with an animal communicator that kind of sent me down the path as well. And I feel pretty honored to have played this part in your own trajectory, becoming an animal communicator. And yeah, for anybody listening, wondering about the cremation and the episode with Dawn, we'll definitely put links in the bottom of the show notes here in case you want to jump back and listen. That was really an incredible episode. So there's just so much that can direct us down our paths. And I feel like your story is just really incredible and beautiful, and how our animals even kind of can lead the way in a way of how we get to where we're going.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So our topic for today, Kathy and I reconnected kind of mysteriously through this symposium that was hosted earlier this year. It was hosted by the University of Saskatchewan, and it has a big, long title that's really a mouthful. But it was called the Multi-Species Methods Research Symposium, Intuitive Interspecies Communication. So I'm just going to read a little excerpt from their website so you get a little feel of what we're talking about. The Multi-Species Methods Research Symposium is a unique event that brings together scholars, artists, indigenous knowledge keepers, animal care providers, and animal communicators to share knowledge, ideas, and build a multi-sectoral and multi-species research community. Focusing on intuitive interspecies communication, or IIC for short, our purpose is to share knowledge and build collaborations to support research that enhances our collective goal, to listen to the voices of animals and nature for the well-being of all. Now, for anybody who's interested in this symposium, I did look up, and if you're listening to this episode before April 1st, 2024, you should be able to go to the website, and if you're interested to purchase access to the recordings, you can still do that until April 1st, 2024. But there's also a ton of free information that's currently up on the website for those who might be interested just to peruse or kind of, you know, catch up a bit on what we're doing here or what's being talked about. There are a number of things, including selected publications, working papers, presentations, and information about the research that's going on within the field of intuitive interspecies communication. So you might just want to check that out, and you may be able to get a really good feel for some of the other things we're talking about here. I also want to note that if you make a donation to this podcast on behalf of this particular episode, I'm going to be redonating 50% of all those proceeds to the University of Saskatchewan Intuitive Interspecies Communication Research Fund. So please note in your donation that you're contributing on behalf of this episode so I can ensure that these funds get redonated to the right place. And I'll definitely include that link in the show notes, but I'll also include a direct link in case you would like to donate directly to this research fund. Okay, so one of the ways that we reconnected, Kathy, was I saw that you were one of the presenters at the symposium and that you had submitted a paper and going to present about this. So I wonder, is there something that inspired you to do this research and submit a paper to the symposium?
Okay, so yes. So let me clarify, this was not technically quote unquote research. It was more of a practice paper, professional perspectives paper. And the 2023 conference was actually the second conference. There was another conference in 2022, which is when I had first heard about this through an email. Nancy Windhart had, I'm on her email list, and she had mentioned about the conference. And I looked at it, and they had put out a call for abstracts, and they could either be research related or professional perspectives or professional practice papers. And since I love research, it was like first, oh, wow, there's actually a research conference related to animal communication. I had no idea. And then second, because I do love research and the whole process of asking questions and then going about finding the answers to them. So I asked myself, is there something that I can contribute? What can I do? And at that time, I was completing my animal communication training. And so the thought that came to me was that I could interview my other 9 classmates along with myself and ask some questions about how we learned about animal communication, how has it changed our life? What did we think about the profession? How well prepared do we feel? What do we think about animal communication research? What kind of research do we think is needed? Questions like that. So I submitted a practice paper for the 2022 conference that was more focused on the personal aspect of that. So that animal communication had changed our lives, and shared quotes from the conversations with my classmates. So I had way more information than I can include in one paper in 2022. So when they had another call for professional practice papers for the 2023, then I wrote and submitted the remaining questions that I hadn't shared before, which was more focused on the profession as itself. So what did we think was needed to advance the profession, and what kind of research did we think was needed if we thought research was needed? And so I loved doing that. It was a project that was small, something manageable that I was able to do on my own dime without any funding, and didn't require IRB approval because it was just more of an interview process. So.
Yeah, I guess I didn't realize that you also participated in the 2022 one. So that's good information to know. I remember hearing about the 2022 one. It was like maybe a day or two before it started. And so I was already feeling too overwhelmed. I'm like, oh, I can't do one more thing at this point. But yeah, it's good to mention that this is 2023 is the second year that this has been going on. And if I understand correctly, they're going to move to an every other year symposium. So I'm not sure if that's set in stone yet, but might be something to look forward to in 2025 rather than 2024 this time coming up.
Right.
So looking at the 2023 symposium, was there something that stood out to you that was your favorite part about it?
Gosh, that's probably like asking a mother, who's your favorite child? There are so many parts that were wonderful, and it's really hard to pick things. I would say some of the things that I'm really excited about actually are some of the research projects that are being conducted. And I guess my personal bent is for practical kinds of research things that I like. And my two cats that I adopted after April and Miko, the two cats that had passed in 2020, they were in a shelter for almost 3 years when I adopted them. And there was a woman, Denise Nestle, who had done a pilot project with two shelters, animal shelters, looking at how an animal communicator could be helpful and kind of the logistics. It was a feasibility study to work out kind of the bugs for what would be issues to do a more full-blown study. And so this year she wrote a paper and presented on that with a panel discussion, and she's planning to start a pilot study number 3. And she's actually looking for shelters and animal communicators who are interested in participating. So I have an email from her that I'll read so that you have some context. So in case any of the listeners would be interested in getting in touch with her about that, they could do that. So pilot study 3 will focus on dogs and will ask 2 questions. The first one is whether providing telepathic animal communication sessions is useful for reducing stress behaviors in dogs while in a shelter or rescue. And number 2, whether staff find the information provided from the communication sessions useful in making decisions about the care of the dog. So as a result of the pilots 1 and 2 above, one of the logistical issues was collecting data in a form that was easily shareable. And so she's been working on some people who can help to streamline that. And for pilot 3, she'll have a mobile device where people can access, complete, and submit both the requests from the shelter for animal communication and for the shelter to submit the results for a survey at the end. And to the extent possible, they plan to record the animal communication sessions on Zoom and provide a copy to the shelter rescue. And she said, if any shelters or communicators would like information about potential participation in pilot 3, they're welcome to call or to email Denise. And her email is D as in dog, Nestle, N as in Nancy, E as in Edward, S as in Sam, T as in Tom, E as in Edward, L as in Lion at outlook.com. And I believe you'll probably put that in the show notes so people have that information.
Yeah, we'll definitely include that. So anybody, if this tickles your fancy and you want to get in touch with Denise, you'll be able to do that. Now, Denise's session was, so coming back to the symposium, the way they had it organized was there were so many different things going on that you kind of had to pick and choose which ones you went to. And Denise's panel was not one of the ones that I attended. I probably could go in and listen to it because it's my understanding that we have access to those recordings till, I don't know if it's till April of 2024 or till September of 2023. I'm not 100% clear on that, but if people wanted to go and listen to that panel with Denise, if they purchased the recordings, you should be able to go in and listen and get more information about that. Do you know if that's right, Kathy?
So yes, all of the recordings are there for the whole symposium, the keynote speakers and the panel sessions, they're all there. And since people can pay to get access till April of 2024, my assumption would be that everybody has access until some point after April of 2024. But I don't know that either.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we might need to clarify that, or maybe it says in the website and I just missed it. But if you're wondering about this particular talk that Denise did, you should be able to go in and access it.
Right.
Yeah.
So back to your question, I really like the practical aspects and the information that was learned that can be applied. So studies like this, as well as other things that you may possibly be asking about later. So I'll hold off on some of those. And then Anna Breitenbach. So she was one of the keynote speakers and was, I very much appreciated her energy and her teachings and her connecting with the no voice that I think you'll probably talk about later, but we had four animals that she connected with and were part of the symposium to share about, about the future of animal communication. So that was very meaningful. And I appreciated her emphasis too on how intuitive interspecies communication is our birthright, and it's something that's innate in us, and it's a re-remembering that we are going through.
I really agree with you about the practical aspects coming through in the conference, because, you know, I think when we tend to think of, well, they call it intuitive interspecies communication. I sometimes just call it animal communication because it's shorter and easier to say, but it does include things beyond pets and domesticated animals. And I think that's one of the things that kind of stood out to me too, is, you know, in the work that I do with animal communication, it does tend to be pretty much all with domestic animals because they have a human person who's interested in what their animal thinks. But one of the things that stood out to me was how it could apply to so many other aspects. Communication with wild animals, you know, I can't remember who it was, gave the example of, through their work, they were able to convince these insects that were doing damage to their orchard. They asked them to move to the other side of the orchard, and they were able to facilitate that happening without pesticides and, you know, all these potentially more dangerous or harmful applications mm-hmm. that could have come forward. And for me too, actually having Anna Breitenbach as one of the keynote speakers was very much one of the things where it's like, oh yeah, I got to sign up. You know, I've been on her email list forever, but I've never actually taken a class with her or heard her speak live. And it was really incredible to be there live with her, and like the way she passed the space and her essentially being the representative for the no voice, which mm-hmm. it's funny. I remember when they first brought that up about how they were going to include the what they called no voice in this conference. And something in me was just touched very, very deeply by that, because here we are, a bunch of humans talking about animals and plants. And what if we actually brought them into the fold and heard what they had to say? Right. And that was a lot of what, it wasn't certainly everything, but it was a part of what Anna facilitated for this conference, was bringing the voice of the animals and the plants mm-hmm. into the symposium. And mm-hmm. I don't know. I think I actually got a bit emotional and started crying when that first happened, because it felt familiar to me. And I don't have any Native American heritage that I'm aware of, but it felt like something in me was like, oh, this feels familiar. And later, I believe it was Copper Jack, he was one of the other presenters, and he's one of the Indigenous knowledge keepers who spoke with us. And it was my understanding that bringing the no voice into these kind of decision-making processes was a big part of the Native American heritage, or the way the knowledge keepers brought this forward. And it just felt so important to me. And it was really very striking from an emotional point as well.
Right, right. Yeah, it really resonated deep inside as a truth. And it really is very much a paradigm shift from most of the way society works today in terms of bringing that in. And so that was very much something I very much appreciated, the expansion of what you were saying, the intuitive interspecies communication beyond just pets to interactions with wildlife, animals in shelters, sanctuaries, and also in discussions of how are we going to be developing land or other issues and things like that. And I really appreciated how he had shared about how they might do that in a group setting where you don't need to have an animal communicator. Obviously, there were animal communicators here at the conference, and Anna was the person who was connecting intuitively with the no voice for the conference. But he was saying that people just get quiet and they set your thinking mind aside and then write what the no voice's opinion would be when they get to that point. They would go around a circle and the no voice would have a chair and representatives there, and people would write, and then someone would gather the things that were written and then summarize the comments. And I do, as Anna was saying, we're all intuitive. That's all our birthright. And we can connect even though we may not think that we are, but we're picking up intuitive information. And so you don't need to have an animal communicator there. There are ways to be able to do that and to bring the no voice in to discussions.
Yeah. And what it kind of brings forward for me too is we really live in this culture of domination, whether it's dominating the earth, dominating plant life, animals. And for me, this way that he talked about, or in multiple, I guess multiple people talked about bringing the no voice in, is a real shift from that dominator kind of culture into a more collaborative way of thinking that, at least from my perspective, I feel like for us to keep evolving as a species and to be able to live with the earth, with the climate change and, all the things that are happening, to be able to kind of move out of this perspective of the dominator and moving into a more collaborative and working together kind of mentality just seems so important.
Yeah. Yeah. And it does take, I guess it's a process, because I know that I've recognized times in myself when in different circumstances where I recognize that I'm not seeing or treating or thinking about animals or plants as having a voice. So I can remember I have a crabapple tree out front, and the person that came to check on the tree had recommended that it have some treatment for some things that were going on with the tree. And so I said, yes. And, here's the money, go come and do it. And then afterwards I realized I didn't ask the tree. Was that okay? Maybe the tree didn't want that. And so I did, I connected with the tree afterwards and I apologized. It's like, I'm so sorry. And how is it about that? And the tree was very, it wanted the treatment. And the information that I received is that it really appreciated the people that came to do that, that had really good energy and that were doing it with love. And so it meant a lot to me, even after the fact, that I was able to get to connect with them and to apologize. And I think that Yeah, it's a learning process. I'm sure that I'm blind to a lot of situations where I'm just bulldozing over things and not recognizing that after the fact. And I've taken some shamanic online classes with Sandra Ingerman, and I love how she says to say to the tree or whatever, when you approach them, may I come into your field of energy? And I just love that. It's so respectful and honoring of them as a being. And so I have much to learn, but it's an exciting journey, and I'm eager to learn more.
Yeah, it's definitely brought awareness to me and my own actions of like, oh, when I'm going to go out and pull weeds in the yard, like, oh, maybe I should pause and see if there's a different way besides just ripping everything out. And yeah, the symposium really gave me pause to start to reconsider actions I have been taking that maybe in my mind or in our culture are just fine, but to kind of look at where in my life am I being the dominator? Where am I just, instead of listening and taking a moment to ask like, oh, could I listen in a different way here? And there could potentially be a different outcome. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's definitely stimulated some things to think about for me.
Right. In my job at the university, we had some training on implicit bias and implicit bias in human contexts, education, age, gender, all sorts of things, that biases that we have that we might not be aware of that affect how we are treating other people or interacting with them. And it really made me think about taking that implicit bias perspective in a much broader sense to implicit bias about animals or even types of animals that we consider quote pests versus other animals that we don't, and trees and, you know, the land itself. So lots of food for thought here.
Yeah, I had something happen just a few days ago, actually. I mean, what you said made me think of it is, there were these wasps that were building one of their little nests, like just right by our back door. And of course, like instantaneously, my mind goes, oh my God, how am I going to get rid of these? You know, like it can't be right by the back door. And then it's like, duh, Tracy, you're an animal communicator. Why don't you tune in and talk to the wasps who are building this and see what they have in mind, you know? And so when I tuned in with them, I said, you know, I'm okay if you have this nest on my property, just not right by the back door. There's just too many issues. And I said, would you please consider building your nest somewhere else? And I even said, you know, if you want to build it on this side of the house, that'd be okay. Or here's a couple other ideas. Mm-hmm. And then I was gone from the house for about a week. And when I came back, I went and looked at the wasp's nest and they had stopped building. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, oh, okay. They were willing to compromise here. So we don't always necessarily have to, again, come in with this dominator kind of attitude or our human bias, you know, right. And that there being other ways that we can perhaps negotiate the situation, again, with fewer harmful side effects.
Right. That's an awesome story of how we can have respect for all the animals, especially our insects, or in this case, I guess, that are there that we might be afraid of or don't want to have around for whatever reason. And yeah. And so if more people would do that, I think that would be great. So I actually wrote a blog post recently. A friend of mine was in the South and she has three dogs and was at the beach and was worried about getting fleas. And so she had communicated with the fleas to ask them to please stay away. And she'd asked me also to check in with them. And so in the blog post, I shared the story of her conversation and my conversation with them. And so the fleas were just very, very respectful and very appreciative that my friend had come to her and to ask that. And they really want people to do that. And so, yeah.
Yeah, well, and if you send me that link, we can include that in the show notes too, in case people want to read about that. Because again, like we said, like animal communication, we tend to think of it as just being for our pets and our beloved dogs and cats, whereas it can be applied to so many other ways. And I think it's really important to keep highlighting those, because people maybe don't understand the full potential for this field.
Right, right. Absolutely. For connecting, especially with the wild animals or insects, that there's not always a positive outcome. You know, animals have free will and that they can say no for whatever reason. And sometimes you need to protect your own and do what you need to do, but giving them a heads up and a choice is, I think, respecting them, letting them know that you're going to have to take action is important.
Yeah, I think that's really valid and important to highlight as well, because I had something actually that gave me an idea of something else that happened to me recently. And so where I live, I don't own this place where we live. We rent, and our landlords have dominion over what happens with the yard and things like this. And so I was away from the house for a while and got the notification from the landlords, hey, we're going to do an overhaul on the backyard. And they didn't tell me what that meant. They didn't tell me what they were going to do. And in a lot of ways, I didn't have a lot of choice about it. And when I got that text message, I was like, oh man, I just had this feeling of like, I have no idea what they're going to do, but it could be really bad. As far as like the nature and the wildlife were concerned. And so I just kind of sent out this emergency alert to my backyard of like, okay, whoever catches this, there's people coming tomorrow to work in the yard and they may tear everything out. I don't know. And they did. They pretty much tore everything out. So when I came home, I was like, holy cow, what, this isn't even my backyard anymore. And there were a lot of bushes and shrubs and other flowering plants and non-flowering plants that were just obliterated. And I felt so sad when I first came home. But then I was tuning in again with the plants in the backyard, and they're like, we are so grateful for your warning. We know, we understand that you're not the ultimate caretaker of this property, that your influence only is so much because of the way your society works, and you know, you don't own this property, et cetera. And they also kind of told me a bit about how, you know, being a plant in an urban environment is a risky thing in general, because you never know what's really going to happen. And I was just kind of overwhelmed by the fact that they, all those plants and the animals and kind of like land spirits, actually felt some amount of gratitude to me for warning them in the first place. Yeah. I was surprised. I thought they were going to be mad, you know? So yeah, I think it is important to note that it's not always perhaps the outcome that you want it to be, but to even have the conversation in the first place can create this, I don't know if it's just understanding or empathy between these sentient and living beings.
Right. That's a beautiful story. And how you sent out the I guess it's not an SOS, but yeah, the warning flare or whatever. And what an interesting perspective to have, that the shrubs and the bushes and the plants in an urban, they're on like, it's like Star Trek going into the final frontier and you don't know what you're going to meet. And so that they're kind of, yeah, out on the cutting edge like that. So that's a very interesting perspective.
Yeah. And I have to say, it really was a lot of this symposium that I felt encouraged to even connect more with the plants. And I mean, I've been connecting with wild animals for a long time, but I really feel like this symposium brought forward this other aspect of being able to connect with other sentient life besides just animals, that I'm not sure I would have even thought of that, to send out the SOS before this symposium. So that was another really positive influence for me about this symposium.
Yes, yes, I agree. I loved how they expanded it from just the animals to the other life. And I'm remembering too, to expand it even further, let me see if I can find my notes from Copperjack, from his talk. He was saying that the no voice, in addition to being the animals that we've been talking about, the wild animals, it's also the land and the waters. And he said the future and the past generations as well don't have any voice. So they're also part of the no voice, along with the more than human animals. So we have concentric circles, plants, and we keep getting bigger to have a more inclusive focus.
Yes. That's really important. I'm glad you brought that up. I had either forgotten that or had not quite assimilated that in the same way, but yeah, there is so much more to our culture and our lives. I mean, yeah, okay, we're kind of encouraged in the environmental movement. Oh, think about future generations and things like this, but to bring in the past generations too is wow. You know, just to think about things in that way is, to me, it seems so important, but perhaps not so obvious to, I mean, in our culture, the way we're brought up and trained to deal with things.
Yeah. Seeing things from more of a spiritual perspective, I guess, or I don't know a lot about the physics new with the quantum, all the quantum stuff, but there's probably things there that can apply. So just seeing it, and I guess not from a 3D perspective, seeing that there's more than just the 3D.
Yeah, and the interconnectedness of all of those things, which I think is maybe what you're talking about with the quantum bit, and how we're all really entangled with each other in these different ways that just because it's not visible doesn't mean it's not true.
Yeah. I love that. Just because it's not visible doesn't mean it's not true.
Right.
It's worth repeating, Tracy.
Yeah. So one of the things that really stood out to me about the symposium was there is so much more going on in the interspecies or the intuitive interspecies communication world. And I was just kind of blown away. Because I guess for me, one of the reasons I resisted going into being an animal communicator was because it's considered so woo-woo and out there. And I kind of didn't want to plug myself into that place. But I think they said there was over 700 people registered for the symposium. And there were so many people that either wrote papers or presented their research, and who they were doing far more than just like what I'm doing with animal communication. And I was so blown away by that. I was, and in fact, it was because of this symposium that I started this podcast. I'd been thinking about doing a podcast for, I don't know, many months. And when I do these new things in my business, I kind of try to hold it up to the animals like, hey, what do you think I should do here? I mean, I'm doing this for you guys, so what do you think about this? And I was just kind of waiting for an idea about the podcast to land. And then because of the way the symposium was organized, we were able to, if people chose to share their contact information, it was listed in one of the online sections of the website, so you could get in touch with people. And I'm like, oh my gosh, look at how many people I could potentially talk to about all these different things. And I get really excited about talking to people about these different things. So I just felt so incredibly inspired that there were so many people doing all these different kinds of research and work within the field that it just kind of blew me away. I was like, oh my gosh, I could learn so many other things. And there's, you know, there's artists and there's researchers and there's, you know, straight up animal communicators. And then there's people like Copper Jack who are facilitating these larger, I want to say like eco related meetings or making decisions about going forward with communities and from an ecological perspective. And yeah, I just got so excited about the fact that there's, because I think they talked about this in one of the talks in the conference too, is how as an animal communicator, it can kind of feel like a lonely profession because, you know, at least since COVID, a lot of us are staying home a lot more and maybe just doing our work from home rather than going to people's houses or things like this. But just to kind of bring everybody together and see all these different aspects that people are bringing to the field just got me so excited. So I guess I want to say thank you to the symposium for inspiring this mm-hmm. podcast in the first place.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I think it's so important, any communication and getting people together. So I very much resonate with the excitement about opportunities where people can get together and learn and network. And the symposium was really important for that. And last year also as well, it was, you know, I hesitate to use the word, it was a holy experience, but it was. I can remember last year, the last session, you know, it's like, nobody wanted to leave the Zoom and log out. It's like people were just staying. And it's like, oh, I don't want this to end, because it's just so wonderful to know that there are like-minded people out there that you can connect with. And that's one of the things that I'm really excited about, that Dr. Kara Gubbins, an animal communicator, is hopefully going to be organizing some kind of a similar, meeting, symposium or something for animal communicators, because I think the more that we can work together and network, we feed off each other and have ideas, and we're stronger and can have more of an impact when we work together and in conjunction with the animals and bringing them in for the future of animal communication and how can we better advocate for the animals and make positive and productive changes going forward. So that's why I'm really excited about the profession and about the research as well. I think that's really, really key in terms of getting information out there so that it seems less woo-woo to folks and that they can see that there's actual benefit, practical benefit.
Absolutely. And I feel like that's one of the things I'm hoping to really highlight through this podcast, is that there is scientific research being done around these kind of things. It's not just some woo out there new age thing. And it also was so awesome, I thought, to see, wow, there's all these potential collaboration partners, because there are a number of people who are doing research and looking for people to help them. So again, listeners, if this is catching your interest and you're like, yeah, I'd really like to be part of some sort of research in this field, check out the symposium website. You may be able to connect with some people that it'll be right up your alley. I feel very excited also about what Kara Gubbins is putting together. And it's still, so we are recording here in July of 2023. And so this is still, as I understand, very much in the organization and formation period. But if you're an animal communicator or other intuitive interspecies communicator, what I'll do is I'll put Kara Gubbins, I'll put her contact page also in the show notes. And depending on when you're listening to this, you may just shoot her an email and be like, hey, can you tell me more about this? Or if you're interested to participate. And I know at one point she was doing a survey of some sort for communicators, but I'm not sure, since I'm not sure if that's still going on, I won't include that link, but I will include a link to contact Kara in case you're interested in this professional organization that's hopefully coming together.
Yeah. I think that's really exciting. And you mentioned too about other research opportunities. And so I'd just like to share another opportunity from someone that I've been in contact with from the symposium. And it's Lachelle Easton. She's a veterinarian trained as a veterinarian, but also an animal communicator. And she is looking for cases where intuitive interspecies communication was used in a veterinary context to help inform treatment and diagnosis, especially when conventional methods fail to yield a diagnosis via the veterinarian. And if there's a professional animal communicator who has any cases to share with her, she could be reached at casestudies@sageanimal.com.
Great. And we'll definitely include that in the show notes as well. I think that's a very interesting area. I just interviewed another woman who used to be a vet, and then she went on to learn animal communication, and she talked a bit about how she had improved positive outcomes from her own work as she saw she was bringing animal communication in to kind of help with her diagnosis. So I think that that's a really, really interesting area. And frankly, the more that we can have documented or scientific backings for those kind of things, the more likely it might be that more veterinarians or other animal professionals at least take a basic course, you know, in animal communication and add that, that bit to their toolkit, I guess you could say, and how that can really improve the positive outcomes. So I'm going to hop back on the symposium website and look Lachelle up and see what other information is there. Cause I'm also really aware that there was so much information in the symposium that I haven't even had a chance to get to all of it, you know, and here it is a couple months later, but there really was so much incredible professional development stuff there and connections with people that, I'm glad they're leaving the information up for a while because it's definitely taking me some time to get through.
Yes. I agree. I haven't been able to watch everything that I want to watch, especially the presentations that were about the art. So I'm very interested to check those out. And then back to the veterinarian, you know, for advancing animal communication, I think it's really important for the practitioners. Well, veterinarians obviously are pretty key because we take our pets to vets or even in sanctuaries, they work with veterinarians, but to have veterinarians who are animal communicators to be doing this because they're the authoritative voice. They can speak to the other vets to help to present and, let's have some more credibility than someone on the outside who's not a vet, I think. And so someday, hopefully, an animal communication class would be part of the standard veterinary curriculum. And I suspect, although I don't know, but that a lot of vets probably are getting intuitive information. They might not recognize that, but
Yeah, that's one of the things this gal mentioned is she said, I felt like I was getting so much intuitive information to start with before I even took a class. And she said, I do feel like there's a lot of vets who are getting intuitive information and perhaps they just don't realize it yet. So that's a really interesting area of research, I think, too. Yeah. All right. Well, Kathy, we've talked about so many different things here today. I wonder, is there anything else that really stood out to you about the symposium or something else that you want to share with listeners that we haven't already talked about today?
Yeah, so I'd like to go back and clarify something that I said in the beginning when you asked me about my background, just to make it clear to folks. So, because I'm not sure what Dawn, you haven't released Dawn's podcast yet.
Oh, right.
Because I talked about her being there at the crematorium when I brought Miko in and also April, she was there. And so the services that I offer are not related to that. So Dawn also had met with me after April was diagnosed. And it was so helpful just to have somebody to talk to as you're going through things, because, you know, maybe you don't have friends or family who want to listen, but somebody who's been there and understands who can listen, and then maybe they can point you to some resources or things like that. So that's more of the services that I'm offering, a listening ear and a safe space for people who want to talk either before or after their animals had passed them. Just to clarify that, it's not anything to do with cremating animals. And then the thing that I wanted to end with, so at the end of the conference, Anna Breitenbach had connected with the four No Voice and had brought through messages from them. And the one that really stood out was the message from the bear. And I thought that I'd like to end with that. And so I'm kind of paraphrasing what she had said. She said that the bear was acknowledging that the spirit of the symposium is really the leading edge, and that we are at the leading edge of human remembering, and that Bear reminds us to keep moving forward. Bear wants us to know that we are protected in the sacred work and sacred joy and sacred play. and that we're protected because our hearts are in service to life and because our motivation is also protection of the wild ones and the wild places. And then she talked about one of the questions that was asked, which was, I will, and what will I do? And so the I will, whatever that is our response to the call of the spirits. And that Bear reminds us not to overly design our actions from the face of only our mind, but to distinguish between the willpower, which might be our personal design or ideas, recruiting outcomes, versus the will of the universe. And so that message just really spoke to me, and I wanted to share that message that came through from Anna from Bear today.
Lovely. Thank you so much for sharing that, Kathy. It's very touching. So Kathy, thank you so much for joining me here today. It's been lovely to chat with you. I wonder if our listeners wanted to learn more about you and your work, where would be the best place for them to go?
So if they can remember Eternal Heart Connections, because I believe that our relationship with our animal is forever and our love for our animal is forever. So my website is eternalheartconnections.com, and then all of my social media. So I have an Instagram account, a Medium account, which is where my blog is, and a Pinterest account. That would be Eternal Heart Connections. And then if they're interested in the Animal Communication Collective, which I mentioned in my bio, which is an organization that of animal communicators who partner with animal welfare organizations to offer fundraising, if they're interested in that email would also be on my website, or their webpage would be on my website as well. But it's animalcommunicationcollective.com.
Awesome. We will definitely include all those links and your social media in the show notes. So if people want to connect with you or the Animal Communication Collective, they'll be able to do that.
Great. So Tracy, thank you so much for inviting me. It was so nice to reconnect with you. You were such a real pivotal part of my spiritual journey with animal communication and my life, which turned out so differently 3 years. Yeah, in the last 3 years. And so thank you so much for that and for the important role that you played with that and how you're making a difference with the podcast, sharing all these wonderful stories from folks. So I love the work that you're doing.
Thanks so much, Kathy. It was so wonderful to talk with you today. Thanks for being here.
Yeah, thanks.
Thank you, dear listener, for tuning in today. I hope you find yourself tickled and considering what else is possible when we decide to listen in different ways. Your animal and nature friends want to communicate with you. Are you ready to listen? If you found this podcast valuable and would like to support us, please use the donation link in the show notes to make a donation. Thank you so much for your support. If you're an animal professional or interspecies communicator and would like to be a guest on the show, please send an email to hi, that's H-I, at tracy-pierce.com. Music is courtesy of Fesslian Studios. All links we mentioned will be provided in the show notes for this episode. If you found this show informative or helpful, please consider leaving us a rating or review wherever you listen to your podcasts.